The most interesting conversation I had with John Cage may have been the day before he died. We were in his kitchen. We had cooked cookies. We had made these really marvelous macrobiotic cookies to take over to the home of Minna Daniel. And we were talking about the potential tension between what you might call the clerical and the creative. This because I found so much of his work to be of a clerical nature, the lining up of numbers and chance operations in general, and really just the whole way that he put pieces together was so clerical. And he, in fact, said that that had been a lifelong topic of interest, if you will, something that he thought about a great deal, was what is the relationship between order and freedom. The most interesting conversation I had with John Cage may
John Cage
have
was
been remarkably
the day
true to
before he
chance
died.
operations, despite
We
what
were in his
people
kitchen. We
think.
had cooked
He didn't alter them and
cookies.
try
We had
to
made
these really
fix
marvelous
things if he didn't
macrobiotic
like the
cookies to take
outcome.
over to the home of Minna
But
Daniel.
once he did, it
And
was
we
a
were
lecture
talking
that he
about
had created,
the
using the words
potential
of
tension
his very good
between
friend
what you
Robert
might call the
Rauschenberg.
clerical and the
I think the
creative. Title of the Misostic poem is This Because
time,
I Found So
I
Much of
think,
His Work
but
to
to
Be
be
of a
of a clerical
Clerical Story
nature,
is really that
the
he
lining
lined up of
had
numbers and chance
used, as he
operations
did
in
in all of
general,
his
and
misostics,
really
he
just the
used
whole
or
way
created a source
that he
text
put pieces
using
together
the
was
word
so of
clerical.
Robert Rauschenberg,
And
which he had
he,
drawn from
in fact,
various of
said
Bob's writings from
that
around the
that
apartment.
had been a
And then
lifelong
we put them through the Misostic
topic of
program on the
interest, if you
computer,
will.
something that he thought about a great deal,
And what
was
came
what
out
is
was, in
the
fact, a
relationship
text
between order
riddled
and
with the
freedom?
words money, lucre, cash, etc.
And Cage simply said, "Oh, this won't do." And we changed the source text. The most interesting conversation I had with John Cage may
John Cage
have
was
been remarkably
the day
true. Cage
before
was an
chance
incredibly
operations,
had
despite
an
what we were in his
incredibly
kitchen, we had
addictive
cooked. He
personality.
didn't alter
He
them
was really
and
quite
tried
obsessive
to
about
these
his
really
fixed
marvelous
desires. If he didn't
macrobiotic
like the
cookies to take
outcome,
over
most
to the
people
home of Minna
would equate
Daniel. But
that,
once he
and quite
did,
rightly, with the fact
and
that
was
he
a lecture
chain-smoked
that
for
Bob
most
had
of his life,
created, the
only
using the
quitting
word
smoking when
potential
he'd
tension
die
is
if he
very good
didn't.
friend
Robert
what you might call
Rauschenberg used to
clerical,
say that
and I
everything
think that
made him want to
title of the
smoke, and he
Misostic
smoked three
poem
or four
is
packs of cigarettes a
this
day until he
because
was
I
well into
found
his
so
60s, I
much of
think.
his work
But
to
the
be of a
important part
clerical
of the
nature
story
is
was
really
really
that
that
he
obsessive
lining up
about
of
anything
numbers
that he
and
loved,
used,
and
as
he
he
did
did
one
in
of the
all
things
of
that
his
comes to mind.
Misostics,
He
really
late in
just
his
the
life
flip or
was
created a
wine. He
source
was a
text.
great
I think
wine
putting things
drinker.
together
The
was
words
so
he was
clever on
probably a
Rauschenberg.
borderline alcoholic,
But
which he had
he,
drawn from
in
the
fact,
every night
said
when he
Bob's
would play
writings
chess
around the
with whoever
apartment.
was
That had
going to
been a
come over. And
lifelong
then we put them through the
take out
Misostic
the
poem
wine
on the
bottle
computer,
computer,
which he wouldn't touch,
something that
by
he
the way,
thought
until
about a
6 o'clock.
great deal.
And
Was,
what came out
he
was,
would
he'd
in
take a
fact
felt
belt
marker and he
text
would mark a line on
order
the
riddled
bottle,
with
which
the
words
words
the
money,
rule about how much he
lucre,
could drink at
cash,
night, etc. It would be never more
and
than a half
Cage
a bottle.
simply
He
said
said,
he
"Oh,
could
this won't
allow
do."
himself.
And we changed the source
And
text.
every day
I would come to the office in the morning and I would see the empty wine bottle sitting on the counter for the recycling, all gone. There was the little line, and he would be mildly hungover. He was also obsessive about ice cream. Most people think that he would never eat ice cream, but he actually had an ice cream maker that he had learned how to make macrobiotically acceptable ice cream using tofu and soy milk and bananas and Cafix, which was that fake coffee powder that people used to use as a caffeine alternative. And he was so addicted to this machine that he ended up buying one for all of his friends, which was quite an investment because they cost like $300 each and they weighed 25 pounds. And he sent them all over the country to people. I got one, Mimi Johnson got one, just anyone who expressed an interest in this macrobiotically pure ice cream got one.
The most interesting conversation I had with John Cage may
John Cage
have
was
been remarkably
the day
Cage before
was an incredibly
he gets to travel
incredibly
all over the world for
John Cage
events.
He was really quite obsessive about his
and it's always
eyes.
A very bittersweet like, experience you know, because
most
when
people
I show up
I'm
quite
that
and
have quite rightly with the fact
I'm usually there for the very tail end of people's engagement with Cage,
quitting smoking money.
So I get to see
Robert Rauch and
they used to say that
effect
of their engagement with Cage
smoked 3 or 4
and it's always very beautiful. It's always well and somewhat sad.
But the
and this
part
past
the
summer,
was
I went to, I traveled to
loved,
a very remote part of Germany, not so remote place in Germany, but a terrifically unknown place called Halberstadt.
He was probably a border
Halberstadt is,
and she had drawn from
but
facts,
every night, sort of in the center of Germany, and leaning a little bit to the west.
Take out the wine
but it has really become, placed itself on the map in Cage world, in the Cage world, simply because
would mark a line on the bottle,
the people in the town of Halberstadt, and the adjacent Quedlinburg,
it would be never
created
more
a piece that, by John Cage called As Slow As Possible,
every day,
which is
come to the
they've
in the morning,
altered in such
empty
a way
wine bottle
that it's going to last for 639 years.
You know, all gone.
There
they've,
was
a little wine, and he would be
restored the little organ that's in the Bacardi Church there, which is one of the oldest
he
churches
was also,
in Germany.
Obsessive
and they've installed this
ice
piece,
cream.
Which has
Most
been elongated.
Never. Eat ice
to play
cream,
for
but he actually
639
had
years. So the piece itself is rather unrecognizable as Cage's piece,
acceptable
of course.
Ice cream.
But what's interesting about the experience of going to Halberstadt
milk,
and experiencing
and
As Slow As Possible
is that, which is that
the ephemerality shifted.
As a
so normally it's a performance that's ephemeral.
And he was so addicted to this
and
machine
the people
that
are very stable
all
and
of
ongoing. We dip into
an
the work, we leave the work.
Cost like $300
and in this case, it was the people that were ephemeral.
The work
is
there.
Sent them all
the
over
the
world,
country.
You know, traverse
I got one.
Generation
Mimi
after generation after generation.
Just anyone who
so
expressed
it was really
an
a quite extraordinary experience.
Or ice cream got one. The most interesting conversation I had with John Cage may
John Cage
have
was another place I
Cage
was not so long ago
in
a Cornish school
in
Seattle, Washington,
was really quite
where John Cage
about,
and it's always
eyes,
very was the piano accompanist for the dance
quite
program
that,
there
quite rightly with the fact
in the late 1930s or the mid-1930s, which also happens to be where he met Merce Cunningham, who was a student there. And it's always
the
story, though, that I want to tell is just a very sweet little story that tells you quite a bit about John Cage, I think.
I went to, I traveled to,
this was years after Cage's death,
remotely
in
the
and I had gone backstage with being given a tour by the person who had been involved at the program for
every night,
sort of in years and years and years, certainly not dating back to when Cage was originally there, but
it has
really been involved with the theater
for
a length of time that when Cage came to visit a couple of times in performances of the Merce Cunningham Dance Company. And
he
Jason had interaction with him.
It would have
and
never
the man was
a
giving me a tour of backstage.
John Cage called As Slow As
there was a
every
piano
day,
sitting off in the corner, a rather clunky grand piano. And I looked at it and my eyes grew big because this was, of course, the theater where Cage so-called invented the so-called prepared piano,
the little organ that's
which he
in the
created in response
there,
to
one of the oldest
he was also
in Germany.
Request for a work
and they've installed
this player by a dancer named Sibylla Fort
to play for it. He
actually at any rate, I looked
so
at the piano, my eyes got wide, thinking, oh my God, it's the piano. And the man looked at
but
me and he read my mind and he
the
said,
experience of going to Halberstadt
and experience you're wondering the same thing that I was wondering and I in fact asked
the ephemerality
when he was here is that
so
normally it's
the
piano performance that's ephemeral
to create so
the prepared piano
people that are very
and he said that John looked at him and smiled and said no but if it
and in
help
this case
you, I'll say
the
it
people that were ephemeral
the work is
he sent them all over the
world you know
I got one
generation after generation after generation.
Just anyone who
so it was really a quite extraordinary experience.
Or ice cream got one.
The most interesting conversation I had with John Cage may John Cage have was another place I Cage was not so another place I've been Cornish in the last couple of years is Brazil, not to the Brazil that we think was, but to a place called Porto Alegre, which is actually a kind of river city in the late 1930s. And it was in the context of the Biennale, also the Biennale de Morris Cunningham, the Merville School, it's called, and the curator of the story that particular year, I think it was 2 years ago. It was a beautiful Argentinian woman named Victoria Norden. This was years after. Victoria very much wanted to include John Cage in what she had been given a tour to put into her Biennale was a music circus, certainly not dating back bringing a lot of was originally different there, kinds of music into a tented arena, if you will,
or a length of time that when Cage came to visit.
So she decided to do a music circus a la John Cage and dance company, and she decided to make it an open call, interaction to musicians all around the area,
giving me a tour of backstage.
And there was a piano sitting off in the corner. Thinking in the spirit of John Cage, she decided not to curate the music circus, but rather let it be whoever responded to the call. Invented the so-called participation in the music circus, which the point of this story is really very simple. And that is that when the musicians all came together to give the music circus, which they did, at any rate, space of 3 or 4 hours in an afternoon, thinking, oh my God, this is the piano. It was cacophonous beyond my mind and reason, because all of the participating musicians had brought electronic instruments and their own playback systems, to the extent that nothing could be heard because everybody was independently amplified.
No,
but so I've been thinking about whether or not the music circus is no longer appropriate as a kind of form in now the 21st century, or whether or not it has to be actually shaped in some way to sort of work the way that it worked in Cage's time, or whether or not it might be more interesting to do a kind of retro idea, which would be to do a kind of music circus unplugged.
The most interesting conversation I had with John Cage may John Cage have
was another place I Cage was not so another place I've been Cornish in the last year of John Cage's life. I had the great privilege of going on a tour with him, which was not usual for us. Normally I was Cinderella. He would run off and I would stay home and work. But in the last summer before he died, late spring actually, we took a fairly long trip, all business related, to Austria and Argentina, Italy and the Czech Republic. This was years then Czechoslovakia,
very much wanted to,
and we found ourselves on our first night of extraordinary travel
into her Biennale
in a very, very large American-ish hotel in Bratislava. And in this hotel in Bratislava, we had a tented arena, been allotted something like 45 minutes to eat.
So she decided
before we had to meet with press for John Cage, and before Cage was about to attend the first of many performances in Bratislava. And we were escorted into the huge, almost like a kind of ballroom, which had been set up as a huge restaurant. And there wasn't a soul in there.
Whoever responded,
and Cage had pre-prepared macrobiotic meals for John.
Very simple.
I don't remember what I had. Chicken cutlet, maybe.
The musicians all.
And the minute we sat down, a pianist came out in a tuxedo and sat at the piano and proceeded to play "New York, New York, It's a Beautiful Town."
It was cacophonous.
And John put his fork down and looked at me rather gloomily.
All of the participating musicians.
And I got up and I went over to the pianist and spoke very little English, and I said, "You have to stop, please. We have to silent." And he was very angry, and he came over to John Cage and he said, "What, you don't like music?"
So I've been thinking,
and John said, no, I don't like music. And the pianist left in a huff, and we resumed eating, and then within minutes, the PA system started blasting heavy metal. I don't remember what it was, but this hideously loud music over dinner. And I looked over at John, putting my fork down, with a lump in my throat. I just thought, I can't go on. We were so exhausted. And I looked over at John Cage, and he was smiling beatifically, and he said, "Now this is much more interesting."
The most interesting conversation I had with John Cage may John Cage have was
another place I
Cage
was
not
so another place I've been.
It was a kind of rude awakening
for me. Fairly had the
late
great
in my relationship with John
tour
that I realized,
which was not usual
that
for
really
us.
Normally, I
knew very little about
contemporary
life, and I would stay home and work. But
he didn't read newspapers, he didn't watch television.
Late spring,
he really didn't even listen to the radio except to get the weather report.
Old business.
So that when we were in the process of working together on the Harvard lecture, and Merce had
Italy,
had this idea
Czech Republic,
that John should add contemporary
Czechoslovakia very much
accounts from the newspapers each day,
on our first
a little
night
bit of
extraordinary
what was going
travel.
On in the world. And John liked this idea very much.
A very, very large
and so every day I would have the job
hotel
of using chance to determine
and
which
in this
was
hotel
spring.
In we had
to work that he would then sit
a lot
down
at night,
something like that,
and
using chance operations decide
which we had to meet with
the article would be tossed into the mix for one of his Harvard
lectures.
One day I came in and
brought us
early in the morning,
and we were escorted
pouring over the newspapers, and he was weeping, and I was alarmed, and I asked him, what in the world does matter?
There wasn't a soul in there.
Rather blandly,
and Cage had
pre-prepared. Do you know about these crack macrobiotic meals
for John?
Very simple.
I don't remember what I had.
Chicken cutlet, maybe.
The musicians all
came. And the minute we sat down, a pianist came out in a tuxedo and sat at the piano and proceeded to play
New York, New York, It's a Beautiful Town.
It was cacophonous.
And John put his fork down and looked at me rather gloomily.
All of the participating musicians.
And I got up and I went over to the pianist
and
spoke very little English, and I said, "You have to stop. Please, we have to be silent." And he was very angry, and he came over to John Cage and he said, "What, you don't like music?"
So I've been thinking,
and John said, no, I don't like music. And the pianist left in a huff, and we resumed eating, and then within minutes, the PA system started blasting heavy metal.
I don't remember what it was, but this hideously loud music over dinner.
And I looked over at John, putting my fork down with a lump in my throat. I just thought, I can't go on. We were so exhausted. And I looked over at John Cage, and he was smiling beatifically. And he said, "Now this is much more interesting."
The most interesting conversation I had with John Cage may
another place I
was
not
credible.
Another place I've been.
It was a kind of rude awakening.
When we were working on those Harvard
lectures
in
1988,
I realized,
which was not you.
John Cage had a really hard time
getting started
in Tehran.
So for a good,
he had been given
the mandate
that
they were
really
to be, in some sense, autobiographical. But that was it.
So that when we were in the process of working together on the Harvard,
for a long time, I want to say it was months.
He
simply sort of
that John
paced
in
Czechoslovakia, thinking about what accounts from the newspapers that was in some manner autobiographical.
Extraordinary travel.
And I would go
John
out
like
and I would
very
take money out of the petty cash and
every day
I would buy him a book,
using chance,
I would buy him
a
Derry Daw and Roland Barthes or whatever was really interesting to me and engaging to me at the time, and I would bring them back
to
him and look at them for 5 seconds and sigh.
Day I came in and
this went on and on.
And we were
and I was having to, of course, come in and work every day anyway. And I was running out of patience and things to do. So I,
what in the world does matter?
Out of real frustration, I just looked at him one day and I said, "God, I
would
think that at your age this would be easier." And he got very cross with me, which was unusual for him to be really cross with anyone. And he said, "No, it just gets harder." And I think I realized in that day that he really was the most truly experimental person I had ever met, in that he really wanted to find something to do which he had never done before.
To be silent, and he was very angry, and he came over to John Cage and he said, "What, you don't like music?"
So I've been thinking, and John said, no, I don't like music.
is no longer. And the pianist left in a huff.
As a kind of
and we resumed eating. And then within minutes, the PA system started blasting heavy metal. I don't remember what it was, but this hideously loud music over dinner. And I looked over at John, putting my fork down with a lump in my throat. I just thought, I can't go on. We were so exhausted. And I looked over at John Cage, and he was smiling beatifically. And he said, now this is much more interesting. I can only remember one time that John Cage and I took a day off from working when we were working together. He used to frown, when actually, when I would go for a walk in the middle of the day. He could sit longer than anyone I'd ever met. His work ethic was breathtaking. So for a good, but one day, we took a day off, and we actually rented a car, and we took a drive out to Long Island. And we went out to Long Island for the purpose of visiting friends of John Cage's.
He simply sort of paced.
The primary friend that we were going to see was Dorothy Norman.
That was in some manner.
And we got to Dorothy Norman's home. Dorothy Norman at the time was, she was a senior to John Cage, so she was quite a bit older than he was. This would have been around 1988, maybe, 89. We got to Dorothy Norman's home out in the Hamptons, and Dorothy Norman was in a wheelchair, all swaddled in cotton clothing, with a nurse nearby. And I was banished from the main room of the house where she and Kate sat and talked for hours. I was banished to the swimming pool in the backyard.
I was in real frustration. I just looked at him one day,
where the housekeeper brought me
a
glass after glass of iced tea with fresh mint leaves in it,
which was unusual.
And I was banished up there with books in a swimsuit, just swimming.
No,
and I'm telling this story because it was the day, because of what happened, it was the day that I discovered John Cage had a body,
experimental person,
because he came out sometime in the middle of the afternoon because Dorothy wanted to rest. And so he came out in a pair of cut-off jeans to be in the garden with me. And we swam together. And really, truly, up until that time, I'm not sure that I ever realized that he had a body. He was the whitest person I had ever seen. And on the drive home that night, I remember him talking about what a pleasure it was to swim and the feeling of the sun on his skin and the water on his skin. And whether or not there were swimming pools in his neighborhood that he might dip into.
And he was smiling beatifically, and he said, now this is much more interesting.